What do you make of this? I mean, Europe's the enemy. You're the enemy.
No, I didn't read it like this. I actually read the European part. I haven't read the rest of it. Of course, there's a lot of criticism, but I think some of it is also true. If you look at Europe, it has been underestimating its own power towards Russia, for example. I mean, we should be more self-confident. That's for sure. And, you know, U.S. is still our biggest ally. And there, I read it as well, that we are still the biggest ally, and it's in the interest of the United States as well that Europe lasts and that we are really still the ally and working together for these things. I think we haven't always seen eye to eye on different topics, but I think the overall principle is still there. We are the biggest allies and we should stick together.
This is my video update on this Saturday afternoon, December the 6th, coming to you from Athens, Greece. Let's talk about some news. And before we get to our main news topics for today, remember to like this video. And when you hit that like button, remember to say, I like it a lot. I like it. I like it a lot. And also, if you want, you can share this video. And if you liked the video and you like this channel, please subscribe. So let's talk about what is going on in the world. Let's begin with the New York Times. And they ran an article yesterday where they blame the corruption in Ukraine on Zelensky. The New York Times claims that after an investigation into the corruption in Ukraine, a New York Times investigation into the corruption in Ukraine, that they have concluded that Zelensky is responsible for the corruption. He sabotaged efforts by the U.S. and by Europe to prevent a corruption. And the United States and Europe, the Europeans, they created supervisory boards. And they created these supervisory boards because they wanted to avoid corruption while also being able to provide Ukraine with all kinds of money and weapons. And so the dilemma that they had when Russia initiated its full-scale, unprovoked invasion of Ukraine was that they wanted to provide Ukraine with weapons and money. But they realized that Ukraine was very corrupt. And so their solution was to create anti-corruption organizations and anti-corruption supervisory boards. But Zelensky, he went around these agencies and these supervisory boards, and he sabotaged the U.S. And the EU mechanisms to prevent corruption in Ukraine. And if you believe that, well, then I've got a bridge to sell you. But anyway, that's what they're running with. That's what the New York Times is running with. Someone has to take the fall, and they already got Yermak, or they're about to get Yermak, and so they're now looking at the Green Goblin. The Green Goblin is in trouble. When the New York Times turns on you, that's when you know you've got big problems. Zelensky's government sabotaged oversight, allowing corruption to fester. Ukrainian leaders blame independent advisors for failing to prevent graft. A Times investigation found that President Volodymyr Zelensky's own administration removed guardrails. He removed the guardrails. That's what they're saying. President Zelensky's administration has stacked boards with loyalists, left seats empty or stalled them from being set up at all. Leaders in Kiev even rewrote company charters to limit oversight, keeping the government in control and allowing hundreds of millions of dollars to be spent without outsiders poking around. Hundreds of millions of dollars? What are you talking about? Hundreds of millions of dollars? Hundreds of billions of dollars, New York Times. Oh, boy. So the big story for today is the publication of the United States' new national security strategy, a 33-page document. From what I understand, it was authored by Colby. He was the main author of this document, this strategy, and it defines the Trump administration's foreign policy doctrine going forward, the United States' foreign policy doctrine and strategy going forward. And there's a lot of people talking about this document. Some analysts are happy. They say this is very America first. Other analysts are not so happy. For example, the Europeans are very upset because the document is not very favorable to the Europeans. And then there are people like me, I guess, and I see some positive in the document. I also have my doubts about many of the things that are written in this document. But I think she just came right out of the bushes, right out of the bushes, freaked me out. Where did she go? She was in the bushes, and then she just disappeared. Am I seeing things? Did you guys catch that? Are my eyes playing tricks on me? I don't know. She came out right from there. I turned my back, and now she's gone. Wow. All right, let's get back to the news. That was freaky. That was freaky. What a beautiful church. So what was I saying? There's some good in this document. There's some stuff that I have doubts about. Time will tell. Time will tell exactly how realistic this document is when it comes to U.S. foreign policy. Is this just a piece of paper, just a document, just rhetoric? Or is the Trump administration going to adhere to this new foreign policy doctrine? We'll do a video. That's what I was going to say. We'll do a dedicated video on the Duran on the new doctrine, the foreign policy doctrine. But let me summarize the national security strategy, the new national security strategy. Let me summarize what I think is going on in the new national security strategy. I don't know why I can't remember that. The new national security strategy. Here's how I read it. And I'll try to go region by region. Africa, no more lecturing on ideology. And the new strategy is transactional. Partner up with countries that are ready to do business and partner up with countries that have resources and stop lecturing and stop focusing on ideology. So that's the approach to Africa. The approach to the Middle East, the new approach to the Middle East is complicated. That's the approach to the Middle East. It's very, very complicated. The approach to Asia is a little bit of cooperation, a little bit of confrontation, a little bit of cooperation in my life, a little bit of of confrontation in my life. That's the approach to Asia, right? China is the number one competitor, and the U.S. needs to contain China, needs to take on China, but also needs to work with China. So that's Asia, and special focus on China. Russia is, let's get along with Russia, right? That's the strategy for Russia. Let's get along with Russia. Project Ukraine, let's wrap it up. Let's wrap up Project Ukraine. Europe, the strategy for Europe is that they better pick up the slack of defense, of taking care of their continent, taking care of their region. The United States is sick and tired of taking care of Europe, so they better pick up the slack and they better start being accountable and responsible. And they have messed things up in Europe. They've messed things up with Russia. They've messed things up in their economy, in their society, with immigration. They've messed things up. In 20 years, Europe may not even exist. And so Europe better shape up, and the United States is going to try to help Europe shape up. But Europe's got big problems, and the United States is very, very unhappy with Europe's performance. And then we have the Western Hemisphere, which is being dubbed the Trump corollary to the Monroe Doctrine, right? The United States is going to place most of its focus and most of its emphasis on the Western Hemisphere. That's the document. That's the new national security strategy in a nutshell. And obviously the Europeans are very, very upset with this. The globalists are very upset with this new strategy. The U.S. puts normalizing relations with Russia among core interests. The new national security strategy calls for a swift end to the Ukraine conflict and preventing further escalation in Europe. The document says that the future of Europe is one of decline. Their economic decline is eclipsed only by the real and stark prospect of civilizational erasure. If present trends continue, the continent will be unrecognizable in 20 years. And there's also discussion about NATO, and perhaps it's time for NATO to stop expanding so much. Stop expanding so much, NATO. It's not doing anyone any good. All of your expansion. So is there anything else I need to say here about this document? The document starts off by saying the days of the United States propping up the entire world like Atlas are over. The days of propping up the world like Atlas are over. No more propping up of the world. Got that, world? We're no longer propping you up. Some people are looking at this document and saying it's an America First document. I can see that. I can also see how this document is just another way for the United States to buy some time so that it could eventually get another crack at Russia, get the Europeans to spend more on military, get the Europeans to spend more on weapons, free up the United States so that it can focus more on a pivot to China. And after 2, 3, 4 years, you go after Russia, you go after China, and you try to establish primacy once again, the unipolar world order. So Reuters had an interesting article where they claim that the Pentagon is telling the Europeans that they better get their defense in order, their defense spending, their defense rearmament, their military buildup. They better get it settled and in order by 2027. According to Reuters, this is a deadline that has been placed on the Europeans. I believe Reuters is sourcing five officials close to the Trump administration or within the Pentagon. But Reuters does say in this article that they cannot confirm if this is a Trump White House official policy. But according to the publication, the Europeans have been put on notice. You have until 2027 to build up your military without the United States. You're going to buy weapons from the United States, of course. You're going to buy all your weapons from the United States. But we're not going to be in Europe holding your hand. You guys have to build everything up by 2027. And the Europeans are complaining, according to this article, to the Americans, saying that it's just not enough time. We need at least until 2030. Why are they in a rush to build up their military by 2027? Why is the U.S. putting pressure on Europe to build up their military by 2027? Well, I think we know the answer to that question. But the Europeans are saying we need until 2030 because they make the right case. It's correct for the Europeans to say that the U.S. just has weapons and intel that we just do not have. And it's going to be impossible to get the type of weapons and the type of military and the type of systems that the United States has in a couple of years. It's just not going to happen. I don't think it can happen by 2030. But the European deadline for another smash with Russia is 2030, around there, 2029, 2030. Some Europeans have said 2027, like Kaya Kallas, but forget about what she says. The Europeans, they would like to get a conflict going with Russia by 2030 with the United States involved. And the United States is saying, no, you guys have until 2027 to get your military in order without us. Reuters, the Pentagon, is not specifically saying, according to Reuters, that this is all about a conflict with Russia. But I think we know that that's what this is all about. So, since I mentioned Stunning and Brave was in Doha for some Doha security conference or Doha summit or something like that. And she was on a panel chaired by a very sophisticated journalist and international correspondent, Christiane Amanpour. And Amanpour, she got her hands on the new U.S. national security strategy document. And she grilled Stunning and Brave Kaya Kallas, sophisticated journalist, and Stunning and Brave in one room on one panel. Wow. How much did those tickets go for? I would have paid a lot. I would have paid a lot. I like it a lot. I would have paid a lot for those tickets. Yeah. Stunning and Brave and sophisticated journalist and international correspondent, Christiane Amanpour. So Amanpour asks Kaya Kallas, she says, Miss top high commissioner of top diplomacy of foreign policy in the European Union, top diplomat, Miss Kallas, I'm Christiane Amanpour, international correspondent and a very sophisticated journalist, and I have just read the United States' new national security strategy, and the document says that Europe is the enemy. What say you? And Kaya Kallas says, I didn't read it like that. She says, I read it as the United States saying that we're their number one ally. That's what she said. You're probably the only person on this planet who read it like that. Yeah. Callas said that the document says that that Europe lacks confidence. And she's right about that. The document does say that Europe lacks, according to the United States, Europe lacks confidence. And Callas said that the document is telling Europe to start getting its act together and to start building up its military and to start taking care of Europe, for Europe to take care of Europe. And she said that it's the United States acting as a good ally, as Europe's number one ally. That's how she read the document, the new strategy document. Stunning and Brave with Christiane Amanpour. And I missed it, and I wasn't there. I'm very, very sad, very upset that I wasn't invited. Let's move on. Let's move on. Do I have anything else to say about that? I don't think I have anything else to say about that. Yeah, Christiane Amanpour said that Europe's the enemy. The enemy. And Callas said, no, I didn't read it like that. Like this. I didn't read it like this. The European Union and the G7, they're weighing a ban on the Russian shadow fleet. And this ban, what it's going to do is that it is going to target the Russian shadow fleet tankers that are operated by Collective West companies. According to Reuters, one third of all the Russian shadow fleet tankers are operated by shipping companies located in Greece, in Cyprus, in Malta. And what the EU and what the G7 is proposing is to ban their cooperation, these companies in Europe, their cooperation, their work with Russian energy, Russian oil. So the EU and the G7 is looking to put this into practice. One third, they claim, of the Russian shadow fleet has some connection to European companies. And the G7 and the EU, they don't like it. They don't like it. What the European Union did do, which is pissing off the Trump White House, it's upset J.D. Vance. It has upset Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz. Very, very upset. Elon Musk, rightly so, is upset, is that they have placed a $140 million or $150 million dollar fine on X. The EU has placed a fine on X in accordance with their DSA Act, their Digital Safeties Act or Digital Services Act. I forgot what it stands for, but it's the DSA Act. I believe it's the first fine from the DSA, the Ministry of Truth for the European Union. And they claim that X is not transparent. They claim that X is not operating its blue check mark properly. Something like that. Its blue check mark is misleading or it's not operated properly. So they fined X with $150 million. They also fined Elon Musk. Remember last year, about a year ago, a year and a half ago, when they were first cooking up the DSA, the Digital Service or Digital Safeties Act, whatever it stands for, that the European Union, they approached all of the social media companies and they worked out some sort of a deal. Access. I believe they worked out access into their systems, right? So they could also monitor what was going on as Europe. And most of the social media companies, they said, okay. Facebook, of course, was like, yeah, of course. I thought we already had given you access to our systems, right? That's Facebook. Come on in. Access anything you want. But Elon Musk, to his credit, X, to their credit, they said no. They said, no, we're not going to comply with your orders, with your demands. That was about a year and a half ago. And now we have the fine, $150 million. And Musk, of course, very upset. J.D. Vance, he posted on X, one second. Rumors swirling that the EU Commission will fine X hundreds of millions of dollars for not engaging in censorship. The EU should be supporting free speech, not attacking American companies over garbage. Marco Rubio said the European Commission's $140 million fine isn't just an attack on X, it's an attack on all American tech platforms and the American people by foreign governments. The days of censoring Americans online are over. Alice Weidel of the AfD party in Germany, she commented on Rubio's post by saying the European Commission appreciates censorship and chat control of its citizens. They want to silence critical voices by restricting freedom of speech. That's what it's all about. And Elon Musk posted the EU should be abolished and sovereignty returned to individual countries so that governments can better represent their people. Down with that, Elon Musk. Yeah, they're upset. Elon Musk is upset. Rubio is upset. Vance is upset. And they do this right at the same time that we have this new strategy doctrine, this new strategy document, which says that the EU as a civilization, Europe as a civilization, is in the golden toilet. It's going down the golden toilet. What's up, my friend? So yeah, not the best of timing for the European Union to fine X. Big mistake from the EU. But I guess every now and then, the vassal has to pretend to stand up to its master. Every now and again, the vassal acts up. I imagine that the United States will put the vassal back in its place. I have no doubt about it. So there was a big missile strike in Ukraine yesterday. Big Russian drone and missile strike. We have blackouts pretty much all over Ukraine. Yesterday, the Ukraine military, they took a shot at Grozny, at Chechnya, and they launched a drone into one of the big commercial high-rises in the city center, a civilian target. But they smashed this high-rise, and the Chechens, Kadyrov, not happy at all. He is saying that he is going to get his revenge. Chechnya is going to get their revenge for that strike, that drone strike. But the Russian military, they launched a fairly big strike into Ukraine, hitting energy facilities and military targets. And once again, you have blackouts across the entire country, all the main cities, because, as I've said many times, Ukraine does not have any more effective air defense systems. There are reports that Yermak is preparing his exit. A lot of rumors in Kiev saying that Yermak is about to Audi 5000. Yermak has left the building. Yeah, Naboo is about to release some more audio tapes. More of Yermak and Mindich and Golden Toilets and stuff like that. And so before these tapes are released by the anti-corruption agency, Yermak is preparing to leave Dodge. He's banned. Allegedly, he's banned by the Green Goblin from leaving Ukraine. But, I mean, come on. Come on. He's Audi 5000. It is reported that Naboo is preparing a new series of audio recordings as part of Operation Midas, which concerns the role of Andrei Yermak, as well as a notice of suspicion. Yermak is preparing to flee. Operation Midas. The Naboo investigation is named after the golden toilet. Operation Midas. Oh, boy. I don't know what that guy was yelling at me about, but anyway, let's see here. Ushakov gave a bizarre... Check out the olive tree. So Ushakov gave a very strange interview yesterday where he said that the Ukraine peace plan is going to be written by Jared Kushner. Jared Kushner will be largely in charge of writing the peace plan on Ukraine. Putin's top aide Ushakov said, a new person, Kushner, has joined in, and I would say he has proven very useful. Putin has already met with him, Witkoff, 6 times. They had a really friendly conversation, he added. That's what Ushakov said about Witkoff, constructive and friendly meeting. But it looks like it's Kushner, according to Ushakov, that's going to write the Ukraine peace plan. The Ukraine peace plan is going to be written by Kushner, really, Ushakov? Ushakov's trolling. He's trolling. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Perhaps Kushner is going to write the peace plan. Maybe he is going to put the peace plan together, but I mean, you know. Ushakov, come on. You're trolling us. Kushner is going to write the peace in Project Ukraine. Okay. Okay. The European Union... They are now left with only one option for the Russian frozen assets, and that is at least to fund Ukraine. They're left now with one option to fund Ukraine, and that is the Russian frozen assets, because Hungary shot down Ursula's other plan, which was Eurobonds. Hungary said, no way are we going to give money to the Green Goblin. No way are we, as Hungary, going to take out loans or be responsible for loans to the Green Goblin in order to fund the Green Goblin. And so that was Ursula's plan B. And so the only other option to funnel money to the Zelensky regime is through the Russian frozen assets. That is the only option left. Hungary shoots down Eurobonds as alternative to EU's asset plan, Russian asset plan. The UK is saying that they're ready to hand over 8 billion GBP of frozen Russian assets to aid Ukraine if the EU agrees to handing over the Russian frozen assets. Then what the UK is saying is that they're prepared to hand over 8 billion of Russian assets frozen inside the UK. I believe the UK has maybe 20 billion is what I read in frozen Russian assets. It seems very high. But I think I read somewhere that the total amount of Russian assets that they have frozen is 20 billion. But I believe that number is total assets connected to Russia. State assets, private, individuals. So I guess you could count something like Abramovich or something like that in this number, this 20 billion number. But anyway, the UK is ready to destroy its economy by handing over 8 billion to the Green Goblin. But first the EU, they have to hand over the 140 billion. Well, they have to take the 140 billion and hand it over to Zelensky. And Belgium is still resisting. Sweden, however, is picking up the slack. Good on you, Sweden. Sweden to the rescue. They're going to be giving the Green Goblin 212 million GBP. And where are they getting this money? Actually, I think they're giving 110 million. And they've just raised another 212 million. And they're getting this money by cutting aid to other countries. Tanzania, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Liberia, Bolivia. Sweden has just cut you off. You guys are done. No more money from Sweden. All that money is now going to be redirected to Zelensky. Sweden is committed to Project Ukraine. Should we do some clown worlds? Let's do some clown worlds and we can wrap up today's video. That's Alexander the Great, a smaller statue of Alexander the Great. There's the big statue of Alexander the Great in Thessaloniki. That's a nice statue at Thessaloniki. So, two good clown worlds, two very, very good clown worlds for today. Clown world number one, and I thought this was AI. I really, really thought this was AI, but it's not. Macron in China on an official state visit. He got very excited because there was a crowd of Chinese citizens who were waiting for him and who were cheering him on, and they wanted to meet him. And so Macron sprints over to the crowd. He's so happy. He is so happy. He's so excited. He sprints over to the crowd, and it's a boy band. It's Macron's boy band experience. If I didn't know any better, I would say that Macron was part of the Backstreet Boys or something. He was so happy. He was mobbed by the crowd. They were taking photos of Macron. They wanted to shake his hand. He was so happy. I think Macron found his home. He finally found a place where people like him. I wouldn't be surprised if Xi Jinping got together a couple of hundred people and said, look, here's a couple hundred bucks. Just cheer Macron on. Come on. Take some photos of him. Be nice to little Napoleon. He's had it rough for the past year. Yeah, he was so happy. He was sprinting to the crowd. A huge smile on his face. Little Napoleon. And it's not AI. I don't think this is AI. So that's clown world number one. And clown world number two is that Trump finally got his peace prize. Yeah, he got his peace prize. It's official. Trump has been giving his peace prize. Not the Nobel Peace Prize. He was given the FIFA Peace Prize. The FIFA Peace Prize. That's what Trump got. The first, I believe it's the first FIFA Peace Prize ever given. And actually, I called this one. When it was announced that FIFA was going to give a peace prize, I believe I did a video where I said, come on, Trump's going to get it, right? Of course he's going to get it. And sure enough, he got it. He was happy. He was happy. He got a big trophy, big FIFA award. He got a medal that he wore on stage. He got a certificate. And he's the first FIFA Peace Prize winner. U.S. President Donald J. Trump. I believe the village people actually were at this event, and they played YMCA, and Trump got up and stood up and danced to YMCA, and yeah, it was good vibes all around. But to be fair, I would rather have a FIFA Peace Prize than a Nobel Peace Prize, right? I think a FIFA Peace Prize is much better to have than the Nobel Prize for warmongering given to Maria Corazon Corina Machado. So that is the video, everybody, theduran.locals.com. We are on Substack. We are also on X and Telegram and Rumble as well. So check us out on all those platforms. And I will see everyone tomorrow. Take care.